Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for still being here with us at this late hour. And also thanks very much from my side to the organizer, to Françoise and Jim and everybody else, and also to the commentators of having read and engaged with the paper. So as Jim already said, this is a co-authored paper with Andrew Geddes, which deals with the regional perspective. So far we had a national perspective inside, so now we bring a little bit the regional dynamics, and we also just very recently, to make some publicity since Gerasimos is also here, published a book on the regionalization which covers all regions in the world. So if you're more interested in these dynamics of regionalization, so this might be complementary. But now to this chapter here, so we named this chapter From Politics to Politicization. You will see why, and also think this is the link between many of the papers here and a strong bond, like what we could really develop further. Also maybe in the introduction is really the politicization, what has changed, and this is one of our main arguments. So, but just to give you a brief outline, so we'll first refer to the major arguments we make, referring to the main major points of the book. So the one concerning the gap and the convergence. So this is really, we focus on those two. And then also, so I refer to the driving dynamics of migration politics and policy making, namely the politicization, as I just mentioned, and also changing, I will expand a little bit further, changing political cleavages, and also the perception of migration by political elites. And then I will a little bit refer to two subfields of migration policy making, which represent and can illustrate the gap and the convergence very nicely, namely irregular migration and asylum. So again, not only do they represent very nicely the convergence and the gap, but they also like fit well in a sense, because here the European Union, of course, it has developed the most competences and has the most policy substance, so to say. And I will then conclude. As you can see also from this structure, I will not expand, or this is also to say, I will not expand or describe these cases a lot, because we are all experts in these rooms, so I will not tell you the whole story of the European Union, I will not re-narrate it, but we'll try to summarize it so we also have time for discussion and really focus on this main point also of politicization, which I would like to bring in a little bit stronger as it still has been the case. So as I said, the major arguments of our paper is that really what has changed and what we have to take into account are the underlying dynamics, political dynamics that shape the scope for and the extent of convergence for migration policies across Europe, but also in other regions in the world. But also, other authors, they mentioned politicization, but I think it's also at this point, it's also necessary, what do we mean when we say politicization? And I really would argue with the referring to Wilde, that first, it's really an increasing salience. And many of the authors before they spoke, they referred to public opinion, but I think it's really important, salience is not anti-migration attitudes. Salience is really that there is more attention to a specific issue, but also, really the increasing attention. So it doesn't imply if it's positive or negative, but like for instance with irregular migration, with the European migration crisis, this has gone much more into the focus. So this is the first point, politicization, the salience. The second point, we have a diversity of opinions on the issue. What does this mean, diversity of opinions? This leads to a polarization of the issue. And also we spoke a lot about this, and this was also very interesting in one of the cases when we heard that Canada is the least polarized. So in many other regions in the world and many other countries, what we see is really this polarization, which the transformation of party politics, which goes along this phenomenon. And the third is, and this we see especially well and especially nicely with the crisis, is really an expansion of actors and audience who engage in the process of opinion formation. So it's really these three factors we have to take into account and think we can observe very nicely across different countries and across different regions. So we argue in this paper, when you read the paper in full, it's really the intensified politicization which we see, which makes a vertical top-down EU-driven convergence less likely to occur. So actually, we argue a little bit against the idea of convergence, at least not convergence per se, but the vertical top-down convergence. So what we say in the paper is that it's much more under politicized environment, is much more likely that horizontal convergence occurs, so learning processes from each other, what we very nicely can also observe in the European Union. So we call, and also not we call it, but also like states themselves and state actors I interviewed, they call themselves like-minded. So the group of like-minded states, formations, they learn from each other, they simulate, but they also regroup. And this is also fascinating, you know? We spoke of the Visegrad group. Now Austria is also classically has become part of the Visegrad group. Italy, against its own national interest, is also has become part of the like-minded. So we see these processes of these countries that share similar perspectives. And second, our major argument concerning the gap idea that is between the gap between the rhetoric of migration control and the reality of continued migration has become more difficult to manage, especially when the levels of politicization are high and when, importantly, this politicization extends and includes the EU. So when we look at the last European elections, so this has been the first truly European elections. It has been about the European Union, it has been about migration, it concerned the European Union as such, but not as European federalists dreamed, were dreaming about, but rather in another way, but we can really say these were European elections as opposed to former, which were more about domestic issues. So, and also referring also to Virginie Guiraudon's menu shopping approach, we say also there cannot be an escape to Europe by national actors if Europe is also politicized. So this is also one of our main arguments here. Am I going too slow or is it fine? Okay. So, as I said before, the politicization of migration, and also this conference is entitled Migration Policies in an Area of Globalization and Crisis. So, when we focus on the crisis, actually, so crises often are seen as a critical juncture, things where things change. I have to disappoint you, or as most of you probably also observed, not so much changed, rather existing structures or dynamics amplified. Because the reasons or the causes for what we see in policymaking, these were ongoing since the 1990s, and I said namely the underlying structure of politics, cleavages, which were shifting, and also the salience of migration and the perception of migration, this already changed since decades. And this, with the crisis, it amplified rather than changed. So, Hoge and Marx, like already in 2009, but they also have a very brilliant article, I think also from 2008, where they very nicely describe the shifts of cleavages. So they speak about European integration till the 90s was a quiescent public, there was quiescent public opinion. It was the years of the permissive consensus. So where deals were cut by insulated elites, so this typical Freeman idea, no, or like the making deals behind the gilded doors, so to say, and this enabled the venue shopping, and this is why we see in the 90s this intensified cooperation on migration and asylum. But then things since the 90s, of course, obviously we don't live in these times anymore, and European integration became part of this new cleavage, which some call globalists the winners and losers of the globalization, but ideologically translates basically in communitarianism versus cosmopolitanism. And this is really, and some mentioned it before, is really the political backdrop against which the crisis became a crisis of politics and institutions in Europe. And also, and this here, before Christian Jobke said, like, democracy is bad for migration. And I think many of us still have this idea, which is also this Freemanian idea, the public is against migration, the markets are open to migration. And here, really, I think we really have to dispute this idea, because this idea is leading lots of policymaking, but it's a wrong idea. Because, again, it's salience, but the majority of publics in Europe are not less favorable, they become more favorable, and the majority has not been against migration. And we also see it become more positive. So I think this is something we have to take into account, and we can't keep on narrating this issue of the public opinion. So, and also we have, of course, to differentiate between different types of migration. Of course, irregular migration is another issue, high-skilled migration, again, a total other thing. So I think this is where we really have to refine also our observations in the sense. So, but the important point for us and for the politicization is that it's more salient. So this clearly we can see. So the importance that people attribute to the issue. And this somebody of before of the speaker showed also now one of the Eurobarometers for Italy, for instance, not the importance people see or the most the challenge ahead. So and also the perception of migration dynamics. So it's really this idea, and we made lots of interviews with political elites in the Commission in different member states, and it's really this idea of sustained pressures on the external frontiers that is likely to persist. And it's really interesting because also these ideas and concepts that travel, because policymakers, they use this word of the new normal. So this is the new normal, and you find it then also translated in policy documents. But actually, this new normal is pretty much the old normal, because when we speak of crisis, no? Again, the title of the conference, actually, migration and migration policymaking is always driven by the perception that there is a crisis. So this is one of the driving forces behind, and that's also an interesting point in terms of migration control and the dynamics. So, and also, of course, the concern of the high inflows as major driver of policy development. And also what we argue in the paper, again, as I said, it amplifies dynamics. There is not like a new policymaking approach. There is a consistency as what Ripoll and Servant and Trauner called the policy core. So the policy core basically stayed the same over the years since Tampere, since the early 90s. So this is really reducing the incentives of irregular migration, the management of the external border, and the strengthening of the EU's common asylum system policy, and of course the key sticking point, reform of Dublin, the big unsolved question until today. And of course, regular migration is also there, always figured there, but of course is the weakest point, since also the EU, as I don't have to tell you, doesn't have competence on this issue. So I now will head to these two subfields very briefly. And for both of us, we have a bigger story here. And for the subfield of irregular migration, it's really the quest for external solutions. So, and if we put it or frame it in the concepts of the book, really what we can see, and we spoke a lot about this, also you spoke about it very nicely when you referred to the Spanish case, these trends of convergence, namely the externalization as the preferred policy option. Before we had the debate Spain-Italy regularization in form of regularization programs, we saw this as a mode of dealing with migrants, with irregular migration. Really, there has been a tipping point. This is not acceptable anymore. Maybe, and this was very interesting for me, maybe these hidden forms, this case by case, but nobody today would dare to say loudly to introduce regularization programs anymore. It was always disputed, but now it's a no-go in this politicized environment, and now really externalization has become a consensus. Those of you who still remember the 90s, of course, Germany, Austria, they were already in the 90s proposing these options and these policies, but then it was rather disputed still. And this is a consensus, we can say. So I quote here some, an interview I did. It's really in one of the member states, and it shows very nicely, again, the impetus of the crisis. So the ideas are not new, they're reoccurring, but also in which circles they're occurring. Very much part of the bureaucracy before ideas established, but what we can see with the crisis is more of a political impetus, more political will, and as I said, a broader political consensus behind questions such as, or approaches to externalization. So I will not read it out since quite long, but it's just to underline. So maybe a bit provocatively, we call this the new menu shopping. So the new venues, it's not the European Union, it's not Brussels anymore, but it's Agadez, Bamako, Tripoli, and Rabat. Yeah. So this is our, like, a little bit in a provocative approach, the new venue shopping approach, or the new venue. And also when we come about irregular migration, when we come to the gap idea, of course you see a continuation of irregular migration, of course, but also we have to say there is a decrease. So it's not this big argument that we have this debate in migration politics, does border control work? They do. On a short run, definitely they do, what we see in the European Union. So there is a decrease, but the demand and the structure, how the labor markets are structured and the demand, there is no halt, of course, of irregular migration. And also, how can we explain, so I mentioned labor market dynamics, but also I want to bring in a more conceptual idea, also when we refer to the idea of the gap, or what others call the policy failure. So it's really, when we look at debates or concepts from the policy stream literature, it's not necessarily that I have a policy problem, and then there is a causal or a temporal link, say, okay, here I have a problem, there I have a solution, and then they don't match, then I have a gap or a policy failure. It's not that easy, because also solutions can attach themselves to problems. I have a concrete example, and we were discussing before, like, I don't know, I think Hélène was focusing also on the narratives of smugglers. So, for instance, by focusing on smugglers as the main source of the problem, attention is guided away from other solutions, namely like creating regular pathways or regularization, because those are unwanted clearly by member states and not enforceable because of a lack of competence by the European Union. And also they maintain a focus on irregular arrivals as opposed to much more relevant pathways to irregular migration, namely overstaying of visas. So we have the same phenomenon in the United States. It's the same case for Europe. Of course, they're much more relevant. And I want this here, I want to read the quote out because it's really nice and illustrative for that really solutions attach themselves to problems. It's one of the interviews I did in the European Commission. So, and here my interviewer told me, so, like, really leading policymakers. So I quote, an essential part of our work is to try to fill the narrative with policy in a way, because sometimes we get very fancy phrases, which our political headmasters say here and there, because this is a catchy word where they can look good and look successful. Then we have to fill it with substance. It happens very often. For example, this emphasis on disrupting smuggler networks and trafficking. It came from the top, definitely as a catchphrase. Then we had to substantiate it with concrete action. There were even some proposals to go as far as developing a rationale for declaring smuggling and trafficking, I think, is crime against humanity. After substantive analysis by lawyers, by diplomats at expert level, it became evident that this is a no-go. We had to think of other specific actions in order to justify this narrative about disrupting smuggler networks. So this is just to give you an example that that policies and solutions not always follow one after the other, but it can also be the other way around. But there is a persistent gap also because in some areas we see more lenient approaches who actually do prevail. So, for instance, the focus on irregular boat arrivals, as I said before, puts the attention away from the visa overstayers, but also from other groups, from other irregular groups, especially those from the neighboring the EU, like non-EU Europe. And of most of you will know, or maybe not know, because it's never discussed, largest groups of irregular migrants in the EU are composed of Ukrainians. And this is, again, like an interview I did with a policymaker in the Commission who is responsible for most of the ideas which were implemented during the peak crisis years. And he frankly said to me, who cares about overstayers? Have you ever heard in a newspaper there are dramatic numbers of overstayers in Europe? Everybody's focusing on the central Mediterranean routes. But if you look at the numbers, in fact, there are more people coming illegally as overstayers in Europe. They come, they have a visa, they decide to stay, but the media focus on pictures of the boats. Yeah. So of course, it's the policymakers know, but this is not their concern about the public and about the public opinion. So that's why they focus on certain rather than on other phenomenon. And then also, of course, why we see a continued gap is, of course, also implementation constraints. We didn't speak so much about implementation during this conference, but I think it's a very crucial point. So, of course, we have this gap versus, and this is just the numbers from 2018, 148,000 people returned versus 287,000 return decisions. There is lots of reasons why this occurs, which we all know, the high costs. I also want to mention another one which is rarely debated, but which is an issue, namely resistance to deportation. I recently wrote the paper with Siglinde Rosenberger in Ethnic and Racial Studies, where you can really see that this is a trend in the sense that we see people who have not been politicized before or political have become politicized through the contact, also seeing people coming in with the migration crisis and activated. It's also this part of politicization, the resistance from the bottom, which is also one reason why deportations or returns can't be enforced so easily. And coming to the second subfield, namely asylum, where we have the story, the failure of top-down convergence. As I said, one of our major arguments is that this vertical convergence doesn't work so fine anymore. So, and again, I don't have to tell you the story. We all know it. Of course, the huge issue with distribution here, just listed the country which in relative terms to their own population had the biggest intakes or reception of asylum seekers. And also again, and I think this also since Tampere, we always had this, that the policy core in the field of asylum, that we have that restrictive and liberal tendencies coexist. So we heard a lot about the fortress of Europe, but I think it was really important, and also Aiko did a lot of important work also here, that and others, that we see both. So we see a coexistence of both, but these are, of course, competing approaches. And we would say this is not policy failure, or it's not like a gap in the sense, but it's this commitment, what we see in the asylum field, commitment to protection of vulnerable persons, and a defense and prevention of unwanted migration is what we call deliberate malintegration. So it's a fudging of policy goals and different measures, providing different signals to appease these different interests. So actually, when you think about it, it's quite a clever strategy, no? Because you have different interests, how you reconcile them, that's what you do. You have competing approaches, you keep it rather vague. But again, times changed. So now with the politicization, this increasing salience, this, as Sandra Lavenex and also many others observed, this has put the EU severely into crisis. What do we see? The overall consensus in Europe to grant protection of those in need has become under severe pressure. So there has been a consensus, I would say, before, but also this has changed. As the work of the brilliant book of Natasha Zaun, but also Ripple Servan say, is really the issue of this top-down convergence. When we think back how the common European asylum system developed, so we had this group of stronger regulators, as they call them, Germany, Austria, what have you, in the north, these countries in the north and the west, who created all this regulatory framework, and they put it, on those newer asylum nations, who then were unable to build the structure or the resources to implement this system. But at the same time, by establishing these regulations and with the Dublin regulation, also had more responsibility, but still had weaker, the states had weaker capacities. So this explains a big deal of the asylum crisis or the migration crisis in Europe. And again, you see, like when we come to the gap, so the second point of the book in the field of asylum, so you see that as a solution to heightened pressures, again, to the politicization, again, what we have, of course, the externalization approach, to prevent asylum seekers from moving to Europe in the first place. So there was this big debate again, as we all know, about regional disembarkation platforms. For me, the interesting thing was not so much the debate in itself, because as I said, it's an old debate, but also the resistance, for instance, by the African Union to this approach. So also it's not so easy, maybe as some would have wished for. And also, but for me was also, and those of you who haven't read it, I really recommend read the paper, the 2018 Austria-Denmark Vision Paper, which is very, very, argues in very moral terms, speaks about Darwinism, and also where you can see very well the influence of academia and some academic scholars in shaping these ideas, but I don't go further on that. But it's really, it's really the abolishment of refugee protection inside the European Union. And also, as we see, of course, with the reform proposals of the Common European Asylum System, a strengthening of the safer country concept. So to come to a conclusion and stay in time and keep you all hopefully still awake at this hour. So the 2015 crisis did not change the policy core, but we did see a highly significant, even more politicization of the issue of migration. And this politicization was not in domestic terms, but a politicization of migration as a European concern. And then also it exposed the limits of vertical or top-down convergence, because the political stakes were much higher and basis for agreement in a wider Europe much weaker. So that's why the common European asylum system as a form of vertical convergence effectively broke down. And what we say in the conclusion, and this is not like magic or fortune telling, but I think it's quite reasonable in the sense that what we probably very likely will see, this quest for new venues, for external venues, will continue since the EU is no longer insulated as used to be. So as the Brussels venue now is deeply politicized. And if new venues will be found, or if they will be found, it will be outside the EU. So this quest for new venues will intensify. Thanks so much for your attention.